their secret mountain lair somewhere in Colorado. This is the Image Doctors Photography Podcast with your hosts, Jason Odell and Rick Walker.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Image Doctors Photography Podcast. I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
Hey Rick, it's good to have you here today, and welcome to our listeners out there. Hope everyone is keeping warm up in the Northern Hemisphere. It's going to be chilly this weekend, I think, at least for us. I know there's been some there's been some snow back east, I know that. It's been all over the news. So our East Coast listeners, if you're socked in, hopefully this gives you something to listen to between shoveling out your car.
Please don't drive and listen to the podcast. We don't want anyone falling asleep and driving off the road.
No, this is definitely public transportation kind of material here. So you have to be a passenger to do it. We are going to, what are we going to talk about today? We're going to do our continuing series of little mini Lightroom tips, just little tips and tidbits, and we've got one for our listeners today. We'll hit that early, and then we're going to spend the rest of our time talking a little bit about lens testing. And what we mean is, like, just you get a new lens and you want to just see, make sure it's good, and what should you look for, what should you test, and how should you test it, just before you drive yourself insane thinking that, you know, do I have a good copy or a bad, all those things,
right?
What should you look for? So you buy a new lens, and just to make sure that it's working. Because most of them actually work just great, but there's always some exceptions. So we'll talk about that.
And both of us have seen those over the years, right? It does happen.
Right. It can happen. So anyhow, let's start with our Lightroom tip of the week. And this is something that I haven't used in a really long time, and it showed up kind of a few generations of Lightroom ago, like a few iterations, versions, and it was just this thing tucked in there, and it's called Enhance Details. It's for RAW files. And to my understanding, if you use this function on a RAW file, Lightroom essentially takes your RAW file and runs it through some algorithm and creates a new RAW file from the original. Like, it unpacks it does stuff to it,
demosaics it,
and does all this stuff, and in theory it can bring out more detail. And the first time I tried it, I looked at it and I didn't see anything striking enough to make it worth my time to do, because it makes this gigantic DNG file. But you bring up some points where you found some scenarios in which it actually is extremely helpful. So let's talk about that enhanced details function in Lightroom.
Sure. I think you hit the high points. It demosaics the file using different algorithms. And I really, the name is a little bit misleading. I don't think it really brings out more details. What it does is it can correct for some problems, and they're not super common ones, but I think most people have seen these or experienced them at one time or another, and maybe tried to fix them a different way or just gave up. And so the reason we're talking about this is it's already in Lightroom, and it's just nice to know what the tools are that are in there and when they can help you.
Right.
And so the broader case would be someone shooting something like a Nikon or a Canon or Olympus or a Pentax. It's not a tremendously big deal. However, if you're using one of those cameras and the camera doesn't have an anti-aliasing filter, examples would be like the Z7, the Z7 II, the Nikon D850. There are some Canon models like the 5DSR that don't have an anti-aliasing filter, and there are others. There are a bunch of them out there, typically high-resolution cameras. You can sometimes run into what's called moiré, which is if you photograph something that's, like a fine mesh or whatever, it could be a model wearing a fabric. certain kinds of fabric cause problems, and you get almost like this rainbow pattern.
Right. Window screen. Across.
Yeah, window screen's perfect example, and it can be really ugly. And there's some tools you can use locally to remove it. They work okay, but if you run this process and create that new enhanced detail DNG file, it almost always zaps the moiré that's in that image, almost all of it. It's really effective for that. The other thing it can do is if you're shooting like a field of grass or whatever, and you've got some specular highlights on the grass, when you have a camera that doesn't have the anti-aliasing filter, sometimes you'll see these weird color artifacts that show up. Mm. And they're only going to matter for really big prints. They're not going to matter for images that you put on social media. But a similar thing happens. Run it through this, and it often cleans that stuff up nicely.
And
you get more consistent color and none of those little sparkly, rainbowy things. Mm-hmm. So it's good to know that. So that's the general class. Very specific thing, and then I'm going to shut up. If you're shooting a Fuji, Fujis in Lightroom really don't get along that great. They just don't. The demosaicing engine in Lightroom is just not the best for Fujis. You know, Capture One is better. Iridiant is better. But you can use this enhanced details thing. And because it's a different demosaicing process, it actually works better, and you'll get better sharpness out of the Fuji files. And if you're doing all sorts of weird tricks in Lightroom with alternative sharpening approaches, this gets you out of that zone, and you can just use more of the normal way you sharpen. You'll probably have to bump up the strength by 10 to 20 points quite a bit, but it works pretty well, and it's free since it's already built in there. Fuji's benefit from it a lot. You just don't want to use it for every image because the files do get very big.
Right. So it would almost be a case where, now, is there a way? I don't believe there's a way. I mean, I suppose you could just bring your images in after you get your keepers, run that as a batch. Can you run it on multiple images at the same time as a batch process?
So
you
could do that. I've never done it.
But. Yeah, and then I'm just envisioning the workflow, and then you could remove the original RAWs from your catalogs and you have duplicates of things. You know, if you were really into that. But
no, but, I'll tell you how I use it and how I would recommend it. And then I'm going to tell you what I actually use.
Well, I was talking about in that case where you are using a Fuji and that's every image.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. I do not do batch operations for quote normal images, things that go to social media, stuff that you email someone. Mm-hmm. I just do the normal Lightroom processing. Gets me close enough. It's fine. It's only if I were to make a larger print or an image that eventually could turn up that as a large print, then I'll either run this, or what I really recommend is get a thing called the Iridiant X Transformer. I think that's what it's called. It's a plugin that Iridiant makes. Works fantastic. It also produces a DNG file, but it's a lot smaller than the one that Lightroom creates with the enhanced details function. And it just does a fabulous job in multiple ways. Maybe we'll talk about it some other time, but it really brings out the detail. It has some special tricks for sharpening sharpness fall off toward the edges of the frame, at least from what I'm seeing.
Okay.
It's absolutely great, and it's fairly cheap. That's cool. How I really handle those files.
And those little Lightroom plugins, there's some good ones. And then you're not, because I think for, and we'll go to our other topic, but I think for a lot of, myself included, a lot of listeners, you really don't want to be relying on radically different software and workflow for different images. I totally get the idea that there are products that will align with different kinds of photography, and maybe that should be your go-to. Like, you can make a case for, hey, I'm just going to use something like Capture One or whatever, right? But then you really have to ask yourself, do I want to invest in the overhead and the, not, you know, learning curve, as well as the financial investment of having multiple converters with multiple workflows for just for one-off images? Is it worth it? And for me, most of the time, the answer is no. Right. You know, there's rarely something that I can't just be willing to make small compromises on one or find a workaround one way or another. So, you know, especially when you're using a product that relies on a database type of catalog where you're not just running one image through, because right. You know, and it's we talked about this, you know, what was it, 12, 15 years ago, whatever it was. You know, when you use a raw converter, they don't cross talk. So it's like if you convert something in Capture One, it only exists in Capture One until you make a TIFF out of it or a JPEG, right? So So it's not like I can just say, oh, I'll go edit this in Capture One and then bring it into Lightroom. It doesn't work that way. At least not in the raw state. You have to demosaic it. So you have to convert it. So it's just one of those things. Yeah. Well, anyway, I mean,
hopefully that stuff was helpful.
Yeah.
And if you have some images like that, just give it a try and see what it does for you. I suspect you might be pleased, you know, especially with the Monterey thing. The other stuff is, you know, more nitinoid. Okay.
Understood.
So, lens testing.
Yeah, this
is beating ourselves silly sometimes testing lenses, which I don't think is always obvious in our podcast about the suffering that we sometimes go through to test lenses. It's not that easy.
Well, lens testing is not fun. I absolutely hate it, but I always do a little bit of it when I get a new lens. And you know, you get a new lens, you want to see how well it does, right?
Sure.
And sometimes we do this in the context of actually reviewing, which is a little bit more in depth, and we both hate doing that. But you know, usually the take-home message is a lens has to be pretty bad to not, these days, a new lens has to be, there has to be something really wrong with your lens for it to not perform. But that's not always the case. There are lenses that are better than others. And there's a couple reasons why you would want to test your lens. I mean, one would just be to make sure that it's, that you got a good one. You know, there is that thing called sample variation. Every now and then you'll get a lens that maybe has a defect in it, you know, a real minor thing. But if it affects your images, you want to know that, because most of the time you can return it and exchange it for a replacement right away with your, with whoever you bought it from. I mean, most stores have pretty good return policies and exchange on these things. You know, or do you need to send it in for repair? Maybe it's a used lens that you got. You want to try it, you know? And then there's sort of the nitinoid stuff of like, well, how much better is lens A than lens B? And then you really get into the messy stuff when you start talking about people posting online reviews, which is, you know, one of those things. And that's a slippery area, because everybody wants to think they bought the best lens, and my Canon is better than your Nikon is better than my Fuji, right? I mean,
yeah,
you need to know what your gear will do. You need to understand its limitations. And so let me start off, just when you get a new lens, Rick, real quick out of the box, you put it on there, you make sure that it, you know, attaches, it focuses, you take a couple of test shots. What are you looking for? What's the first thing you look for?
Or what do I do?
Yeah, what are you doing? What are you looking for? Yeah. What are the things that you would look for just right away, just to make sure that things seem on the level with your lens?
Yeah.
Not so, worrying about how it is and absolutes to anything else, just...
And to be honest, if it's just me, I never worry about what you just said. All I worry about is, does it seem good enough? Mm-hmm. But what I'll do is I'll do some, let's just say I got something new, just indoors. I'll try some really simple things, autofocus, making sure it autofocuses correctly. I'll shoot it a few apertures just to make sure the diaphragm is working correctly. Mm-hmm. And you know, just double check settings. If it's got, you know, sliders on the barrel, make sure I understand what the image stabilization settings are for that lens and what they're doing, just so I don't misuse it. Some things like that. And then one of the next things I'll do is I'll just shoot pictures of the houses across the street. I know how they're supposed to come out. Got all sorts of nice detail in them. And it, because I'm pretty familiar with it, with those subjects, I can also tell if I've got weird fall off or sharpness fall off problems, or inconsistencies across the frame. So it's just really easy. And then to wrap it up, and by the way, I make, let's say, 3 to 5 shots like that. Maybe a little bit more if it's a wide-ranging zoom, but I'll just, you know, see if they look good enough and anything strange is going on. And good enough is obviously something I've learned, but usually if you're pleased when you zoom in to 100% or closer, you're going to be pleased. And then the final thing I'll do is just, how do I intend to use the lens? Mm-hmm. So never mind the houses across the street. If it's an 85 millimeter portrait lens, I'll shoot some portraits of my wife and see if I like it. And it, you know, for the most part, it,
I thought you were going to say you're going to go across the street and shoot portraits of your neighbors, Rick.
No.
Note to Rick's that. Neighbors, keep your curtains closed.
Yeah, okay? It's always wise. Always wise. And most of the time it's done very quickly because things are fine and most lenses work well. It's only when you get into the weird problems that you can really start losing your mind. Or if you're doing comparisons between lenses, you can start losing your mind.
That's where it gets very tough. And so I'll bring up some stuff that I, you know, so what I look for, like you said, if you're getting a lens that you intend to use for like landscape work, I'm going to look at it. Yeah, I'm going to look at it wide open just to see what it does. But I'm going to shoot it at f8 or f11 and see how those corners sharpen up, you know, because there should be good enough. And the other thing you should look for is, and I think you said it kind of in there, it's inconsistencies. And what I mean is if you start seeing corner shading, you know, like light fall off or corner shading only on one side of your image, what's going on? Now, the first thing you check, of course, is did I put my lens hood on correctly? Yeah. Like you shouldn't be able to see the lens hood cause vignetting with most lenses. I've had that happen where you don't put it on quite right. It doesn't bayonet on. But I've also had a lens where it literally was shading in the corner and that shading didn't go away at f11 because vignetting should go away at f11. And it was only on one side of the frame. And because it was something that I had purchased from Nikon refurbished, I just sent it back to them for repair and they fixed it. I mean, and then it came back and it was fine. But the other thing you could potentially see is if you don't see things equally sharp on both sides of the frame, you know, when you're looking, you know, you expect sharpness to fall off as you get to the edges. But what you don't expect it to be is asymmetrical.
Right.
That's the thing that you should be looking at. And, you know, and that's where you get into this idea of, you know, a lens could be what they call decentered, where there's an element that's just not aligned right.
Or tilted or
whatever.
A bunch of things can happen.
And that's happened to me once or twice. It just happens. And, you know,
because I've seen it too.
Yeah. So if you look at your frame and you're like, wow, the you know, and most of the time when I'm doing this, I'm doing, you know, not, you know, it's quasi brick wall testing. It's like the really exciting, but I'll have a subject that I know has some detail in it and I'm using a tripod and I know I'm focusing and on the, and, you know, and I'll look at the aperture series or whatever. And if I see one side, you know, and I'm using, you know, it's, and I try to orient myself as close to perpendicular to the subject as I can, because, you know, they're gonna be focused, you know, so. And if I see something where it like looks like one edge of the frame is not as sharp as the other edge, you know, you told me this one, it's a little bit tricky to do, but turn the camera upside down and take a second photo.
Right.
And then look at the two photos in your computer and you rotate the one so they're both. And then when you zoom in and you look at the same area on the image, you know, once you've rotated them back so they're aligned properly, if one is sharper than the other, you have a pretty good indication that you've got something out of whack.
Yeah, and don't worry about little tiny differences.
No, but if
that
it's
can happen, the big differences, which I know you saw in some tests.
I've seen that, and you know, most of the time, you just call your dealer and say, "Hey, look, I think this lens is defective. I want to return it and get a replacement," and they just take care of you. They send you an RMA, and you go along. If it's a used lens or something that you've had and maybe doesn't have warranty, you know, the most dealers only have a a narrow return window, you could send it off to the repair and get it fixed.
One thing I've seen show up is a stabilization system problem. So shooting handheld and your images aren't coming back consistently sharp. It could be sharp in portions of the frame and then very weird and cloudy in other portions. Mm-hmm. And it's because of the stabilization mechanism being broken or not working correctly. And, you know, there's a simple way to check for that. Turn it off.
Right. Try to turn it off.
And I've seen that happen. I turned it off and magically the lens is crystal clear. So, you know, don't forget about checking that.
I think
there's some quirky things that happen with lenses too. And it just the way they're designed and operate, some lenses will have a fair amount of field curvature. Mm-hmm. So in the center of the frame, let's just say your subject's at 60 feet away and you've focused very carefully on that. You go toward the edges and they're not sharp. But if you look more closely, presuming you got the right kind of shot, you can tell that as you get closer to the camera, it gets sharper. And if I use the example of the houses across the street, if I'm shooting with a wide angle, I can see the road and I can see how it's actually pretty darn sharp in between me and those distant subjects. And it's because of field curvature. Depending on how I plan to use the lens, it could either be a problem, like it would be with landscapes, or not a problem if I was using the lens for sports or portraits or whatever. Mm-hmm. But that isn't something that is a problem with a specific copy of a lens. It's the design. And you just need to understand what it is and whether or not it's a problem for how you intend to use it. But that can complicate things a bit.
Yeah, and one thing, you know, there used to always be this whole idea, or my lens isn't sharp or it's not a good, you know. I always look at a lens at its baseline. The one test that I try to do, you know, to get an idea for things is to put it on a tripod with no stabilization, use a remote release, and focus using live view. If you're on a DSLR, if I'm on my mirrorless, like on the Nikons, I'll switch to that pinpoint focus, which doesn't use the phase detect module at all. It's using the sensor. And I take a shot, you know, with exposure delay, you know, whatever. And I look at that shot, and that's usually the best you're going to get wide open. You can get better sharpness and contrast if you stop down, but it gives you this idea of what it was. And where it was really useful for me was with telephoto lenses, using live view to see what the lens could do. And then you ask yourself, is this a focusing error or is the lens not sharp? Because honestly, if I look at my shot, you know, like, you know, consider something like the, you know, 500 f4, and you can shoot that wide open. That's your, you know, that's your expectation. If you stop down a little bit, it should get better than that. But it shouldn't be any worse than that when you know what the lens can do. Right. And why would it be worse? Well, it would be worse because autofocus errors. And in the DSLRs, that might have meant using AF fine tuning, something we've talked about in the past, you know. And all of a sudden, you have that reference and you say, wow, if I fine tune my autofocus so that when I'm using the lens with the normal way, you know, phase detection, you know, the traditional focusing mechanism, I get a result that's pretty close to what I saw using the solid tripod. There's so many variables you have to worry about, and autofocus is actually a huge one, because focus errors could lead you to think that the lens maybe isn't as good as what it really is capable of doing. And I know you had an experience with this because different camera systems focus different ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the one that I know I've mentioned to you multiple times, and I think I've even made some references to it in podcast. Fuji came out with a 16 to 80 F4 lens a year or so ago, something like that. And it, you know, that's a really nice focal length range on an APS-C camera. It's a 24 to 120 equivalent, great for travel, general purpose. but God, was I not getting good, consistent results, especially at 24 millimeters, at the equivalent of 24 millimeters, you know, 16 millimeters on it. The center was fine. The edges were crap, utter crap. Even stopped down all the way to F8 or F11, crap. And at least at times.
Yeah. And that's the fun part, right? When it's not consistent.
And by the way, I've seen the statement before that all lenses are about the same at F8 or F11. Not true at all. Some are, and some are not.
Right.
So it's not something you can count on. At any rate, what I found was that there were several things going on with that Fuji lens and the system. One is it's got some field curvature. And it's got a lot of native distortion. That combination is deadly. When the lens corrections are made, you lose a lot of sharpness at the edges of the frame, and it just happens. And that lens is only going to be so good, at least for images that you print large or care a lot about. But there were two other things going on that were causing problems. One was Lightroom. And there was a reason we talked about the enhanced details option, and I mentioned the Iridian thing. It actually dovetails with this topic. There's a weird thing that happens with Fuji X-Trans sensor cameras and Lightroom. Like we talked about earlier, the demosaicing is not the best for it. But the way I would describe it is if you have a lens that's very, very good and sharp, Lightroom does pretty well with it. As it becomes less sharp, or if you have problems toward the edges, it gets exponentially bad. It's like it accentuates any problem that's out there. And you can just end up with stuff that looks awful, just awful, like that 16-80 I mentioned, just looked awful, even stopped down. If I process it instead and capture one, it looks better for sure. And if I use the little Iridian plugin I mentioned, it looks even better than that. And that alone took away a lot of the problems that I had, but not all of them. Mm-hmm. The one last one was autofocus. And one of the things I've learned, which frustrates the heck out of me, is Fujis are really terrible focusing at wide angles and stop down. So if you're shooting at a, you know, like the 16 millimeter focal length I mentioned in F8, it is horrendously bad at focusing. And one of the things I did is I turned on the focus indicators in the viewfinder so you can see a little scale and see where it's focusing. And for these, you know, like the houses across the street, that should be showing up more or less at infinity or close to it. What I was saying is sometimes it would be at about 30 feet or beyond, which is just fine. And then it would be at 7 feet. And then it would go back to infinity and then back to 7. And you only see this if you do a succession of shots. That's when it becomes really obvious. But it's happening. And I was having problems with focusing misses at wide angles. Couldn't figure out what was going on. And there's a way around it. Maybe we'll do a tip in a future podcast on it, how to use your Fuji to get around some of these problems. It's a couple of them, including just refocusing, and it'll jump to some other point that's okay. But there are other things that we can talk about that help with it. But the main point is you have to look at the broader system at times. It may not be your lens that's causing the problem, and if you're doing some testing, do it in such a way like the way you described earlier, where you're isolating autofocus problems from lens problems. Otherwise, you will just chase your tail and drive yourself nuts.
You've hit on those major points. And I think if you're, you know, because the average person does not need to do like hardcore serious lens testing. God, no. But, you know, you do want to make sure that your equipment is delivering, you know, what you might expect from it. As soon as you start at, you know, and anybody who does any kind of testing, if you have any kind of science background, you know that you can't solve multiple variable problems. Mm-hmm. You have to isolate down to one thing, right? So with lens testing, that means you need, if you were looking at the lens, it means you need to make sure it's focused exactly correctly. You're not introducing anything with vibration reduction systems. And then when you're shooting raw, you brought up this last point. If you're comparing images, depending on how you process them, might have huge consequences into the way you perceive the lens. Now, I've never seen anything like that crazy with, I don't have that Fuji lens. I'm not shooting that anymore. But, right. But you know, your point is, you know, there is, you need to be able to say, this is the best my lens can do. And are you happy with that or not? And this other stuff is things that you have to deal with either in a workaround or changing your shooting. I mean, one lens that we both owned in the past was the 200 to 400 VR Nikkor. And man, it just felt like that lens never wanted to focus at great distance. It was great close up, you know, 100 feet or less. And it was really great. And then, you know, and so one time I was out on a workshop, but we were in the Everglades, and there was an osprey way out on a post somewhere, on a stick mm-hmm. somewhere. And I had my camera, it was just on the tripod, so the bird wasn't going anywhere. So I'm like, okay, let me just try this with live view. And I focused using live view, and oh my gosh, it was sharp. And then I focused again with the regular system, and it wasn't, and I couldn't figure out what was going on. And you know, telephoto lenses, there's other crazy stuff that can happen. You focus on things that are, you know, really far away on a hot summer day, and you get thermal, and you, all of a sudden you're seeing things that are not the lens at all. So you've got to be really careful. And so, you know, you can drive yourself crazy. I mean, chasing your tail doesn't even begin to describe it. You can really make yourself go nuts doing these kinds of tests. So, you know, and as soon as you try to compare between systems, again, you're really dealing with multivariable problems, and it's not always fair. Are there any benchmarks that you use and trust? I mean, I know that people like to use the DxO mark, you know, look at those, but I don't look at those on absolute terms. I look at those and kind of like, okay, this is probably a good, you know, I mean, just, they will tell you that a lens performs a certain way. But I don't look at it in terms of like absolute anythings. If they tell you that it's supposed to be really great and I don't see those kinds of results, I might ask myself, do I need to look at my lens a little bit more? But I don't get hung up on the scores.
Yeah, in terms of benchmarks, no, not really. I don't really care for what DxO does. I think there are a few too many variables in there. Mm-hmm. That they don't isolate, so that I don't find it all that useful, honestly. And this sounds arrogant, and I really don't mean it that way. I would rather test it myself and see how it works for me, for how I'm intending to shoot, what's important to me and what isn't. Someone else is going to have different things they care about, different values placed on them, and as long as it's pretty reasonable, I'm usually pretty happy with it, to be honest.
I guess where I will look at it is I'll just say, if I'm choosing a lens to buy, I might look at those scores to say, how does this one compare to this other thing that I already have or was also considering? Mm-hmm. Does it seem like there's a significant difference? And sometimes those things will show up. But when it comes to I don't test my lens to try to disprove someone online that, you know, it's really sharper than what so-and-so says, or it's really worse than, you know, I mean, the other extreme. But, you know, I will give an example. Like, I mean, when you look at sort of the charts and the, you know, MTFs and whatever, and you look at something like the 85-1.4 Nikon versus the 85-1.8 Nikon, you can sort of tell that the 85-1.8 holds its own pretty well. And and that was true. And what it meant was not that I was trying to expect one to be better than the other, but it was like, okay, I'm happy with what it does. You know, it's like there, you know, either is it worth paying more for, or should I stick with, you know, and that can be a good exercise. because at the end of the day, it has to be good for what you use it for. And and I think you could have three people each with the same lens, and some would say, I don't like this, and others would be, I'm perfectly happy with it.
Yeah, but even like with MTF curves, and you can definitely learn things about lenses from looking at them, you know, prior to purchasing one. But yet, you know, comparing different lenses in different systems with MTF curves calculated by different people, it's tremendous problems. Doesn't work.
It's different methodology differences.
And typically MTF curves are only shown for the maximum aperture. So it could be one way at maximum aperture, and then perhaps considerably better a stop down, and that might be okay for you. And you can't necessarily see that with most MTF curves. But at any rate, like I said, I generally know what I consider good enough, and I can spot it. So if I get a lens, do my simple shots that I mentioned, and it's good enough, I'm done. I'm off to shooting, and no more testing.
That's a great.
I try not to drive myself crazy.
The best piece of advice. I mean, unless you start seeing something that consistently shows up in your shots that makes you scratch your head, you know, be happy. 99% of the time, it's probably something else. It's not the lens. It might just have been, you know, user error or something like that. Okay. If you would like to tell us that we are wrong with our methodologies, or something to share, just drop us a note over on our Facebook page, facebook.com/imagedoctors. We'd love
to. But I will say, if anyone suggests doing more thorough testing than we do when we get something new, just skip it.
I've already lost enough time and brain cycles, even during a pandemic. You know, I still have better things to do. All right.
However, if it's a lens we're going to talk about in a podcast, we take a lot of care.
That's true. That is a good point. Thank you.
Everyone should know that.
Yes, we do. We do thoroughly look at stuff. All right.
And that's why we hate it so much.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Totally agreed. Well, until next time. We will see you in another week, and happy shooting.
All right. Bye-bye.